The weather for the Monterey Bay Area is fair today. Low clouds tonight, mostly cloudy Friday with chance of rain by evening. Highs in the upper 60s, lows tonight in the 40s to low 50s, and light winds. And with that, I bring you Maeve Russell.
Oh, hi. Good afternoon. Dialogue Conspiracy is on the air again. 45 minutes to talk about various things that took place in the news this week that pertain to the past political assassinations that I researched, and everything is coming down so heavy. I've done 9 years of research into the John Kennedy assassination, and then the Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and then branched out into the various massacres that are done by the law enforcement agencies and the police departments, our own special provocateurs at home. The war is at home. I always said the bullets went off in Dallas in 1963 that began the American Civil War, the war on the streets, with the shooting of John Kennedy. But the news is coming in so fast that every day, I take 8 papers a day, that it's hard to sit down and write a book or concentrate on the past political assassinations. And the format of this show is to take the news each week as it pertains to the past political assassinations and show how the news is affected. But if you get to the top of this conspiratorial peak, the main goal of the whole shooting was to take a police state, to take the Democratic Party and dismantle it and put it into a one-party system where the electoral process would be under the control of one particular group who lost at the time that John Kennedy won the election. And when you talk about a police state, it has so many different branches to study, and I'm going into 3 things today that pertain to the past research that are very important, and I'm going to briefly list the things I want to talk about. If we have time, we'll do them. I'm going to talk about the appointment of Patrick Gray, the nomination of Patrick Gray, the acting head of the FBI, because that is number one in the list in a terms of conspiracy and murders or assassinations in this country. We saw the Wallace shooting where Richard Nixon got 20 million votes because Wallace was eliminated from the elections, and you saw the Watergate affair with the espionage team that's worked with Richard Nixon since 1960 at the Bay of Pigs. And the man who became the acting head of the FBI just before these things took place, one, the planning stage was planned and went into effect, and the other, they were caught in the act, but the evidence showed this espionage team and their links to the Justice Department. This man's appointment has been held up. We're going to go into that for a minute. Then we're going into the appeal of Sirhan that was turned down this week. The news is so glum in terms of the speed with which things are moving now as against in 1963 up to 73 that I sometimes wonder if there's any point in even as tempting in 45 minutes to project some of this onto you. But we'll keep going if it's interesting. I don't think any single week since I did my research in political assassinations was as depressing as this week in terms of news. We'll go into the Sirhan appeal, and then we're going into the Santa Cruz murders, because I barely touched on that about 2 weeks ago. And when Cynthia Schell was murdered, and she was supposed to be the witness for the defense in a narcotics case. Since then, there's 21 murders up from the coast, the body pieces from Alameda down to Big Sur. And I'm going to show you how to follow that case as the story breaks every day, because it's really just beginning to break. And I've studied carefully the Oda family massacre, and this is engineered by the same team. And if you watch it closely and you weren't aware of the Oda massacre, I'm going to give you some guidelines on how to read the news on this terrible scene that's taking place on our coast in California. I promised to talk about the Middle East conspiracy and the energy crisis. I can't do that now, but last week when I barely got into it and mentioned that questionnaire that I got from Navy postgraduate school, in that interim, the first airplane of Israel was attacked on a routine flight that escalated the Israeli-Arab conflict just this last week. Briefly, I'd like to talk about the Philippines and the martial law, because U.S. assassins were hired to kill Mr. Marco in the Philippines. And from the Washington newspaper that I get, it's a little newsletter that watches the Washington experiences going on. And there's a quotation that Mr. Richard Nixon is the boss is interested in the Marcos experiment. I said Greece was a test case for overthrowing this country. The Marcos experiment was final plans before we get some kind of a state emergency here. I want to talk about the Alameda air crash. All these things pertain academically and statistically into the apex of this police state, the evidence in the Alameda air crash that we barely touched about last week in terms of creating emergencies, testing a hospital that was ready. Because this last week, if you heard the show the week before, we talked about that briefly. And this week, it was announced that the airplane pilot had no oxygen. His oxygen mask caught fire. The plane had no parts broken when it went down. The plane was in good shape. The pilot's oxygen mask caught fire. It was, in quotes, a localized fire where the pilot was dead, but everything else was all right on the plane. And the investigators said they still couldn't isolate the cause of that crash. The New Orleans sniper, new information comes in that the chief of police in New Orleans has said that Mr. Essex, the black man from the Navy that was used as a provocateur to spread a little terror down in that part of the country, was decided he would act alone, the chief of police said. But they're more cautious in their statements now. There's always a lone assassin who leaves a diary or leaves handwriting on the walls. The chief of police says he acted alone, but, now here's the in quotes, it has not been definitely determined if Essex did or did not have one or more accomplices or conspirators. Now that's the way the headlines are reading. New Orleans sniper acted alone. Then when you read the paragraph below, it says it hasn't been determined definitely if he had one or more accomplices or conspirators. So how could he act alone? You see, the headlines are so deceiving. Now the evidence was, number one, one gentleman, Mr. Bemish, said the man who shot him had a goatee, and Mr. Essex didn't have a goatee. There was a helicopter above taking fire long after Mr. Essex was shot, and there was shooting from the roof after Mr. Essex was killed. There was evidence that there was much more than one gunman, but the point is that the one that they're pinning it on is killed. So now you get the Mardi Gras in New Orleans, and everybody's afraid, and there's terror down there, and it diverted from the shooting of the students at the university in Louisiana. Well, these are all we could do a one-hour show on each one of these subjects and barely touch it. But the most important question now is Patrick Gray going to be head of the FBI? And I want you to write letters if he's appointed as the head of the FBI. I will stop doing Dialogue Conspiracy on the radio. I've been on, it'll be 2 years in May, when Ellsberg surfaced and brought us the Pentagon Papers with the story of the deniability, the lies, the secret way the government managed that war, the phony provocations that allowed the Tet Offensive, the Gulf of Tonkin, the escalation of the war, the lies that Johnson brought to Congress after he provoked the situation. Ellsberg's on trial down in L.A. He's been arrested. Very few people in the 2 years have read the Pentagon Papers, but when he surfaced, I began working here at KLRB 1 hour a week talking about political assassinations and what was happening in America at that particular time. In those 2 years, everything gets more downhill. It's more of a downer because the evidence is so flagrant about the conspiracy, and yet people sit back and do nothing. Now, I did a show here last May, and there was a barbecue down at John Conley's ranch, and I told everyone to really watch that barbecue, that this is the War Council. They met once before at the home of Clint Murchison, the night before John Kennedy was killed. Richard Nixon was there, and J. Edgar Hoover, and a whole team. And everything changed. Our whole form of government, electoral process changed the next day. That was it. So now we had, in May, a barbecue at the Conley Ranch. And the cast of characters wasn't printed, but there was enough printed to tell me that something was heading towards an apex, again, in this country, based upon the research I had done, the 9 years research. Well, that same week, J. Edgar Hoover was dead. Patrick Gray was appointed acting head of the FBI. George Wallace was killed. Now, that was just 1 week that those things happened. Now, after the barbecue, I am going to read you a letter that I have written to send to members of the Senate, every member of the Senate, and maybe you can get some ideas for yourself about what to write. But I wish you would write Senator Cranston or Senator Tunney or Senator Sam Ervin or any one of the senators, there's 100 there, write 100 if you can, or 50, or 7, or 8. But tell them that you do not think, if you do not think Patrick Gray is qualified, if you think he is, fine. But even if you're for Patrick Gray, if you think that he's qualified, then you should have no objection to asking for some of this other evidence being put out in the open before he is made the official acting head of the FBI. Mr. Gray left the FBI in 1960. He had a career at Annapolis. He was trained in the Navy and got his education as an officer in Annapolis and left to work for the political career of Richard Nixon. And hardly anybody knew his name until after J. Edgar Hoover died, and the very next day, out of the woodwork, came L. Patrick Gray III. He'd never really been in the FBI office. He didn't know how many offices they had. And Richard Nixon said, "That's my buddy," and he'd been working for his election and manipulating the behind the scenes with the ITT, calling off that investigation. And he worked in the Justice Department, Health, Education, Welfare, working for Richard Nixon all this time, and he surfaced as the acting head. Now, what I wrote in my letter to the various senators, because I send a whole blanket to all of them, this is what I said. Richard Nixon believes his election mandate, in quotes, allows him every decision and appointment, and that will have the approval of this great nation. That mandate is as firm as Jell-O under the noonday sun if proper investigative agencies examine the electoral espionage in the past 10 years. The Wallace conspiracy, concealed by L. Patrick Gray III, assured Richard Nixon of 20 million votes more than any opponent who had run against him, and it finalized the John Mitchell Southern strategy. L. Patrick Gray said recently, in quotes, "Criminal justice system should be for the protection of society, not just for the protection of the rights of the accused," end quote. He then proceeded to protect every criminal in political sabotage since he became the acting head of the FBI. That is Arthur Braemar, Arthur Braemar's co-workers, the investigation of Braemar and the Wallace shooting and the entire Watergate affair. He has protected those people. He said the criminal justice system should be for the protection of society. But when his agents are caught, then he protects the rights of the accused. Mr. Gray has worked with John Mitchell, the Justice Department, Chief of Police Ed Davis in Los Angeles, and Sheriff Peter Pitches. He has put the lid on political and conspiratorial murders in the city of Los Angeles alone, and I mention those because I take the LA Times, it's one of my 8 papers a day. I don't know where else he calls around the country to stop investigations, but he's the man who called U.S. Attorney Robert Meyer and told him to stop investigating Ruben Salazar, Jerry LeMay, the Isla Vista riots, and the Sharon Tate-LaBianca murders. These things were important because Ruben Salazar was investigating the links of the FBI to the Los Angeles Police Department and the CIA. U.S. Attorney Robert Meyer was fired upon a call from Patrick Gray on January the 19th, and he said when he signed indictments against the police officers in calling them in saying that those men did not make mistake shootings, that they were murders, they were not justifiable homicides, that the LAPD was doing. Robert Meyer said, "I signed my death warrant at that time. The services for Attorney R.L. Meyer were in San Marino, November 16, 1972. He was dead 10 months later. The Los Angeles dismissal of FBI agent Wes Graff by Patrick Gray III, when he first came into office, he fired a large number of FBI people that had been close to J. Edgar Hoover. One of them was Wes Graff, chief of FBI in Los Angeles. He fired him because a wiretapping device on the telephone and having to do with hijackers, which I know were their FBI provocateurs. But he said, "I won't investigate Mr. Graff's financing." And it turned out that Mr. Graff had almost $500,000, and half of that was linked with C. Arnold Smith, the man from San Diego who was Richard Nixon's long supporter. The evidence of the Los Angeles Police Department conceals the conspiracy murder of Robert Kennedy, and Patrick Gray does nothing about that. The new image, this is what I put in my letter to the senators, the image of the FBI that they're going to have young agents, females, they can wear their hair long, they can have colored shirts. They're going to hire blacks as a public relations job to appease only the ignorant from what is an entirely corrupt and political Justice Department. It's a one-sided political. Anything that serves Richard Nixon or Spiro Agnew will be to the interest of the Justice Department to conceal. And anything that goes against their opponents, like Mr. Kerner, Judge Kerner in Chicago, or Brewster, they get arrested and go to jail. The Democrats go to jail. The Republicans get off. I said that Richard Nixon had used his CIA with the police departments and had worked with the LAPD, and this link with Patrick Gray and the telephone calls that he had made. This is a very dangerous appointment. Patrick Gray was out in California at the same Newport Hotel as John Mitchell after the men were arrested at the Watergate Hotel. And out in California at the same time was Howard Hunt and Charles Colson and G. Gordon Liddy, Fred LaRue, Robert Mardian, all of the Watergate espionage team. Before Patrick Gray is appointed head of the FBI, he should say under oath that he did not meet with Mr. Howard Hunt that weekend. Howard Hunt was arrested along with six other men at the Watergate trial and pleaded guilty. At the time that Mr. Gray was out in California with John Mitchell, the FBI said they had 150 agents looking for Howard Hunt. Was he with the chief of the acting head of the FBI while 150 agents were running around the East Coast looking for him? Before he takes any oath of office, these things should be gone into. It's the most serious appointment. Well, I guess they're all serious now. The new head of the CIA, Mr. Schlesinger, I was reading his background, and one of the reasons Richard Helms was leaving supposedly was he was too liberal. Schlesinger is more conservative. So that tells you what's going to happen with the CIA. But this is the most serious appointment in the United States because it decides if some evidence is planted against a person or when a conspiracy takes place, or if you hire an agent and conceal the evidence of the second gun in his car like they did with Arthur Brammer, or who he stayed with at the Waldorf Astoria, or how he got his money. You see, whether or not there was a conspiracy to shoot at George Wallace is important, because that is one of the factors that was to cinch the vote that gave the mandate to Richard Nixon. Now, in Los Angeles, the depressing news is about the Sirhan case. It doesn't pertain to Los Angeles because now it went to the Supreme Court this week. And the thing that's so depressing to me wasn't even the fact that the Supreme Court, well, they refused to take the case at all. They just refused to take it. Now, you get a court that is balanced, not balanced, by appointments made by Richard Nixon. And each of those men that was appointed by him should have disqualified himself, because Richard Nixon wouldn't have been president, maybe, if Robert Kennedy hadn't been killed. Therefore, the opponent of Richard Nixon, we're talking about the murder of the opponent of Richard Nixon, and there are many books out now and many articles that it was a conspiracy to shoot Robert Kennedy, just like it was a conspiracy to shoot George Wallace. So it seems to me that the men sitting on the Supreme Court shouldn't rule this out at all. But what happened, they took new evidence. To the two lawyers for Sirhan took new evidence that Sirhan did not fire the shot that killed Robert Kennedy. And for those of you who listen to this show every week, over the last year, year and a half, we've talked about this many times. We've done many, many shows just on the evidence that Sirhan did not shoot Robert Kennedy. You could talk for hours, months on that. The lawyers took the evidence that Sirhan did not shoot Robert Kennedy, and the vote was 7-0 by the justices of the Supreme Court to not even hear the case. Now, 7-0. Okay, where were the great liberal justices? William Douglas and Byron White. You can't blame the Nixon appointees like Berger, or you can't blame Patrick Gray for not going into something. If they're part of the espionage team, you can't blame them for what they're doing. But where are all the people out there? Where are you people writing letters about Gray? Where are the justices on the Supreme Court? Justice White and Justice Douglas abstained from voting. They didn't say why, but this was one of the explanations. Both were close to the Kennedy family, and may have chosen to disqualify themselves on personal grounds. In addition, White was Deputy Attorney General when Senator Kennedy was in the Justice Department. Well, it seems to me that looking at the evidence that somebody has been named as the murderer of their friend or co-worker, they wouldn't be prejudiced to examine that evidence. It seems to me that the other justices should have stepped down and disqualified themselves. If they are there on that appointment only because Robert Kennedy was eliminated, they should have been the ones to step down. And I don't know how the attorneys for, there were two attorneys, Millman and Hansen, George Millman and Roger Hansen, that represented Sirhan. And I don't know how they could take a case before the United States Supreme Court without asking the attorney, the justice appointed by Richard Nixon, to step down. But they went there with a lot of evidence. They went there with a dozen constitutional challenges to Sirhan's conviction. They said that, first of all, he was a Jordanian who didn't get a fair trial because there was so much publicity about his being a Jordanian citizen. The second place, they took a diary from his place, from his home, without any kind of a warrant. They did this to Lee Harvey Oswald, all the incriminating evidence they had. They took, went to the home, grabbed it all up, and they said to his wife, who was there, and Mrs. Payne, the hostess who owned the garage where this incriminating evidence was, they said, "Well, we don't have the search warrant." She says, "Well, come right in. We were expecting you. Take it anyway." And the stuff they took, Oswald said it was planted. He didn't own it. He only lived 2 days, but he said it wasn't his. Well, in the Sirhan home, there was this diary and incriminating evidence, and he wanted to question that. But he also had evidence. They also had evidence of extensive physical proof in terms of ballistics that William Harper did. There were 5 discrepancies between Kennedy's body and the bullets, and those fired by Sirhan's gun. And the Supreme Court refused to hear them. Now, if you don't think that was a depressing week for me, not that I expected anything great of them, but where can you turn to when the ballistics and the autopsies and everything show that the assassin is still out on the street and that Richard Nixon can do anything, dismantle his offices? He is skimping away everything in terms of economic opportunity, legal assistance. Everybody's going to be whittled down to the bone, except the armament industries as usual in the military. But here are these lawyers that in a case that there's 5 discrepancies between the bullets from Kennedy's body and those fired from the gun. At the time of the trial, the defense attorneys never questioned the finding of the police ballistic experts. Now you see, here's the catch. The defense attorney is always brought in by the people who are responsible for the conspiracy. So they don't bring out the ballistic evidence. Private investigators in Pasadena, just like I'm a private researcher, stay with this stuff. We're doing this work and trying to put it together. His so-called defense never came and showed that it was impossible for Sirhan to kill Robert Kennedy. Now, Mr. Younger, our attorney general, always has to get in the act. He was a district attorney down there sitting on this conspiracy, and the attorney general of California now, he made a statement this week in quotes, "Unfortunately, this new evidence was not presented to the California Supreme Court, so it's not on the record of appeal." Why they didn't go to the California Supreme Court before the United States Supreme Court, I don't know. But again, Ronald Reagan and Evel Younger control those men and their decisions pretty much. So who do you turn to? Here's the evidence of the conspiracy to kill Robert Kennedy. And there's enough there to impeach Nixon, remove Patrick Gray, and all the heads of the Justice Department, Kleinitz, Rheinfuss, any of them you don't like. But who can you turn to when it's 7-0? We won't examine the evidence that Sirhan did not kill Robert Kennedy. It's so depressing to me. I shouldn't be on this weekend. I'm really feeling bad. Okay, now let's go to Santa Cruz because we've got 20 minutes, and that is very, very important. The Santa Cruz massacres, and I have a list here of the dead. We can read them off if we have time. The names of what happened are coming down upon you. Watch the cover story. There's several important points I want to make. One is that at the time of the Angela Davis trial in San Jose, there was purposeful violence and death to affect the decision of the minds of the jury in the San Jose community and to turn the people against the blacks. I call these our little Reichstag murders that are happening all over the country. At the time of the Angela Davis trial, she was accused of being part of the conspiracy to shoot Judge Haley at the shootout in Marin County in 1970. And she moved the trial to San Jose because she said she couldn't get a fair trial up north. And at the time of her trial, a man named Jacob Zitzer was murdered in cold blood by the California law enforcement police agents. And a jailbreak was staged. Three men were in on the stage, Norman Lucas, Fred Guerrero, and Jacob Zitzer. And they were offered $1,000 to stage a jailbreak, and they were given 12-inch homemade knives. And the purpose, one of these men has testified because he didn't get his $1,000, the purpose of the jailbreak was to affect the jury at the Angela Davis trial. This was in August of 72. Now, in August of 72, 1 week later, another black man was killed in San Jose, and that was James Carr, who left his home riddled with 40 bullets. He opened the door, and he was riddled with 40 bullets. James Carr was a friend of George Jackson's, and Jonathan Jackson, the brother George, was in this Marin shootout, and they tried to link James Carr in some way to the Angela Davis trial and couldn't, although they might have been friends. I think she said she didn't know Carr. But Lewis Tackwood, the agent provocateur who provided so much information on what became the espionage squad, the Watergate group, worked for the LAPD for 9 years, and he had said that the LAPD had a contract to kill James Carr in San Jose. But this is what they do. They don't just go out and kill a man because they want to get him for a particular reason. And incidentally, James Carr was Tackwood's brother-in-law. He was married to his sister. They wait until a particular time so that it affects the community at the same time. So that James Carr, the announcement was out that the LAPD wanted to kill him, but they don't just go up and kill him and get rid of him. They do it at a time of election or terror or trials to spread fear in this state. So James Carr was murdered, and the two men were arrested, and they're in jail, and he said they were paid $540, and they were hired. And they came from L.A. and drove up, and they killed James Carr, which confirms, you know, what Tackwood was saying. Now I'm going to tie this into Santa Cruz. We have a trial going on now of Rochelle McGee, who was co-defendant with Angela Davis, and they decided to have separate, they wanted separate trials. Rochelle wanted his own trial. And his trial for his life as being innocent of killing Judge Haley is going on right now in San Francisco in the trial is going very well in terms of evidence, but you never know what's going to happen. So this week, while the trial was going on, the news media breaks the story of these four gory deaths. The girls' bodies were found ranging from Alameda down to the Big Sur area, and they were sawed off. Their heads were off, their arms and fingers cut off. One was a Carmel girl. You've got four deaths. And Peter Chang, the same district attorney who covered the terror of the Santa Cruz Mountains with total fabrications to frame Frazier as a patsy for that particular massacre. Peter Chang's a district attorney at Santa Cruz, had an article in the Examiner this week, which is an article by Don West called Four More Bodies Found in Santa Cruz. And then it's also called Is Santa Cruz Murderville? Now, Peter Chang blamed the drug culture. He says there's a drug culture crisis in our community. And kids up in Santa Cruz, wherever my voice listens, this was the idea of the Manson thing, the Oda thing, was to turn against the kids that would protest when Agnew's president or what Richard Nixon does, to come down on the kids and blame these murders on a drug crisis, which is not, has no bearing at all. None of the evidence coming in is that it's a drug crisis at all. But Peter Chang had a long article where he made several statements about the drug crisis and drug problems up in his area and the hills where all this drug manufacturing is supposedly going on. Then he goes on, revolutionaries have practiced guerrilla warfare and hidden in these hills. Revolutionaries' friends like Fred Bennett were found dead there. But this is the important part that came out in the news this week. Revolutionaries are so secure in the serene atmosphere of Santa Cruz that plotters of the August 7th, 1970, Marin County Courthouse invasion set up shop both in the mountains and in town, within a mile of the local police station. The shotgun that killed Judge Haley was sawed off, according to a police informer. The shotgun that killed Judge Haley. the same week, this is February the 19th, February the 20th, in the newspaper in San Francisco at the trial, the experts were saying that the chest wound had killed Judge Haley before the shotgun went off. Now, what you're getting here, it's very complicated, but it isn't really complicated at all. I accuse these particular law enforcement agencies from criminal conspiracy section and CII of maneuvering at the time of these trials of Angela and Rochelle, the terror and the spread. They do three things. They silence people that are supposed to appear at trials. The very first girl that was murdered, his body was found, that Cynthia Shell, was supposed to be the witness for the defense in a trial up in Santa Cruz, a narcotic trial of a young person who said he was framed. And she was told by the enforcement agencies, get out of town or you'll be murdered, and she was murdered. And another witness was told, get out of town or you'll be murdered. He split. She was murdered. And then three other murders followed her. So what happened? People that are testifying in that trial are afraid they'll be murdered. They wonder, if I testify, will I be murdered? So what you're doing, you get a rash of 21 murders, and people are afraid to the fellow who is on the stand thinks he should plead guilty. Maybe go to jail 3 years to life. If he says he's innocent, he might be killed. There's a reign of terror, like with the Oda thing. It has to do with heavy narcotics, not kids at all, witnesses to narcotic scenes. So what you do, you silence your witnesses at a trial, number one. You put the blame on the youth and the drug culture so that everyone hates them and fears them, number two. And also they hate the blacks and fear them because this article by Chang brings in the blacks or black rapists. Possibly a black was raping 50% of those. And then what you do, the third thing, is you try to link the Marin shootout revolutionaries to Judge Haley. Richard Nixon came out at the time of the Manson trial, or just before, and said Manson was guilty. But here is an article coming out with references from the DA the same week that the trial is going on, saying that that gun killed that judge. And this is a very serious thing to have in the news media when the actual evidence shows not only did that gun not shoot, kill Judge Haley, did not kill him, but that the district attorney is spreading fear instead of realizing that people should be calm. That place is wide open, Santa Cruz and the whole entire peninsula is wide open for more violence to come down. Now, the scare tactics of the newspapers coming through, for all of you who read the paper because it's local in our community, they come down on, this is what happens in a system that is permissive. The Dr. Spock, this is from the newspapers, we have a permissive society. The actual truth in this story is that the boy who's accused of doing all these murders, Herbert Mullen, came from a father who was an officer in the Marines. He was in two wars. I'm sure he was very strict. I'm sure the child would tell you nothing but discipline all of his life, strict religious training and discipline all of his life. The second thing was that the boy was supposedly brought in on a drunk record and had been seen drinking, and he'd been out of a mental hospital. They arrested him, but he wasn't sick. He said, I'm just drinking, I'm drunk. The truth is he never had drugs. He never was into narcotics. The gunman said in the paper just today he had no narcotics record. The worst he had was he was involved in the possession of a marijuana smoking pipe. That's what the paper said today, a marijuana smoking pipe. But they don't come out against strict parents, authoritarian parents, when they want to say all these 21 people are murdered. They don't come out against drinking alcohol. The third thing was the scare tactic. Everyone in town's buying a gun because he had a weapon to shoot these people. So they tell you that the nuns, the priests, the nurses, everybody's buying guns off the rack like mad. Well, this should be a reason not to buy guns if guns are doing this. If he could walk in and just buy a .22, that should be a reason not to sell guns. So the newspaper says, we can't have the gun laws now because all the crazies have guns. You see, they're not against guns. They're not against authoritarian parents or against alcohol. They're coming down on the kids. The article in the paper says we have to encourage people to get more guns. There's another article that said he was let out of a mental hospital. He had broken down. He was at Mendocino. He had a mental breakdown. But the media doesn't tell you that Ronald Reagan's closing all mental hospitals, that a boy who comes from authoritarian, military, family with a strict religious background, like the Whitman kid, or a whole list of these kids are doing these massacres that go berserk, who say, I wanted to kill my father. I mean, this boy, Mullen, goes up and shoots a man in the garden who's 72 years old. He could have been like the Whitman boy who left letters saying, I hate my father. You see, the whole point of the propaganda of this thing is to come down on the kids and their drugs, their marijuana, or their togetherness, or their hitchhiking. The actual boy who was brought in is not a typical hippie. He's from the authoritarian home. He'd been drinking. He'd been in a mental hospital. So there's no pressure when the news breaks about these murders to have Ronald Reagan open the mental hospitals. The pressure is to get rid of the youth, kids, and lock them up. That they're a menace to Santa Cruz and the society. Then they tell the community, lock your doors. Everyone should lock your doors. Now everyone's locking their doors. None of the evidence in any of these murders was that they broke into a door or broke into a home. They went into a home where three people were killed, Mrs. Francis and her two babies, and they said they obviously knew them. She was eating food out of the icebox. They went in the home of the Guarneros. They knew them. Four girls were murdered because they were hitching home from Santa Cruz at night, or one from Cabrillo, three from campus at Santa Cruz. They didn't open doors and were assaulted. See, the violence that I talked about on last week's show, if you heard of getting your weapons and getting your doors locked, they're playing into all your fears. Somebody has taken these four girls and sawed them up and sawed their arms and legs, and they're telling you, get away from the kids, the drugs, the hippies, lock your doors, get your guns, you're in danger. And the nice policemen are going to come and get you. Now the ranger comes out and he gives an article, and he says those four boys are responsible, in effect, for their own deaths. He says they broke laws. They were lawbreakers. They were nothing like public officials. He says they were not obeying the order to not be on the campgrounds. Well, when you think of all the many, many laws that are being broken right and left, just the Watergate group alone. I was reading an article about the illegality of the National Security Council handing over their wiretapping. They're not supposed to bug homes without permission of the Attorney General, and they were handing their information to Mr. Hunt and Mr. Liddy at the White House against all laws of this land, handing them right to their desk. The lawbreakers stopped at the top up. Four boys were in a tent camping. So the ranger says they shouldn't have been there. They shouldn't have been camping. If they had been home, nothing would have happened. Then along comes this thing about the revolutionaries and the shootout, and scaring you that there's a revolution. Guerrilla tactics in those hills. I have friends that have taken rides in those hills between Watsonville and Santa Cruz on weekdays. The paramilitary is so heavy in those hills. Of the right wing, those aren't guerrilla revolutionaries going through those hills at all, and they haven't been for the last 3 or 4 years. Those are the vigilantes, the scare tactics, the poses that are clinging out some more, that are pretending to look for bodies. They're going through those hills. Now, this boy that was arrested, they blamed the drug culture on this arrest, and they blamed Eastern religions. He's sitting in his jail tonight reading the Judeo-Christian Bible, a strict fundamentalist. He's sitting there withholding his Bible. He's got his own closed-circuit thing going. He's got a self-contained cell and his own shower and a sanitary facility. And he's, like they say, he's an ordinary prisoner. And he's sitting with his Bible. They said Mullen requested a Bible. He's not reading any Zen or anything like that. He's not into Zoroaster or Buddha. He's reading his Christian Bible, the same Bible that allowed Vietnam and Laos and Cambodia and Auschwitz and Buchenwald and every concentration camp in the world and the Inquisition. I'm really mad tonight. I mean, he's not into Eastern religion hardly at all. He may have tattooed on his stomach legalized marijuana, but he is no more part of a culture that wanted to get together. He simply acted out his hatred of his past tradition, of his military home, his Christianity, his inability to be like himself. The neighbor who we get these wonderful people after these murders who knew the alleged assassins when they were growing up, and somebody said, oh, he was just such a nice boy. And then one day I saw standing hitchhiking and he had a beard. It's so disgusting. There was a eulogy for the two girls up at Santa Cruz. It was in today's Mercury. And they read the prayer up there and they described one of these girls as being such a nice girl and fun-loving. And she says she wasn't a saint. She used to hitchhike, and she was the one who had on her record player till 2 in the morning. You know what pop music does for you. Look at the intonations here of the record player. And speaking of record players, I have to digress from Santa Cruz, because 10 years ago, Bob Dylan wrote a song, A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall. He was 22 years old. I read this week, Bob Dylan's down in Mexico making a movie with Peckinpah, the most violent movie maker that there is today, you know, along with Clint Eastwood's movies. It's Peckinpah making a movie down in Mexico. That hard rain that he talked about when he was 22, it's really fallen now. And where is Bob Dylan with the most violent of the violent, making money, you know, over there on another kind of, it has to be another violent movie. As the rain falls, and brother, it's falling now, it's 10 years later, Bob Dylan is out there in Mexico working with Peckinpah. It's these inconsistencies of people's lives, their inability to follow through, or they're getting discouraged along the way and not having a goal. I mean, if you have a goal of justice or truth or feelings for people that are getting ripped off, you have to stay with it. You can't write a letter or think that if you stop working for McGovern, your problems are over. As long as McGovern didn't get in, everything's all right. People get enthusiastic at election time and then they lose heart. You have to stay with these things. You can't forget them. Now we have this whole profile of Herbert Mullen. I don't have time to go into everything about his life, but it's a sad life. I've told you briefly, Mendocino County and drunk and studied karate and a loner. They're bringing again like the Arthur Brammer story. He had a girlfriend, but she rejected him, but they can't find the girlfriend. The one thing, if you got anything out of Dialogue Conspiracy, those of you that listened almost 2 years now, or those who pick it up for 1, 2, 3 weeks, every one of these conspiracies has the same cover stories. They got rid of the script. You know, it's like the movies. Hollywood, I read this week, is going bankrupt with their movies. It's becoming an empty ghost in terms of movie making. The reason it's empty is when the foreign movies came after the war and dealt with honest problems and honest people and real situations, Hollywood was doomed to fail. And the conspirators that plan these murders, that spread terror in your community, that pit the youth against their own community and parent against child and, you know, and family against justice departments, instead of looking for truth, they settle for half-truths and lies. The Hollywood script, the Doris Day movies, the old Loretta Young movies, and Ruby Kilo, they have certain scripts or formats of how they got their man, they kept the man, and the conflict in between, they were written by the same guy. And the Justice Department and the police agencies and the criminal conspiracy section have only one way to cover their crimes. They have one way to cover the story. Their misfit, their loner, their girlfriend is always the same kind of a story. And the smear tactics, the effect comes down so that they get the message in Santa Cruz. Now, girls, don't ever hitchhike again or in Monterey or Carmel. So all of you go get your jobs at Macy's or get your job from 9 to 5 and do your work and don't trust your own instincts about what life is like, because you have to get that car and start making those payments or somebody's going to kill you on a street corner. That's what it does. That helps the car business. It helps everybody that you shape up and get your gasoline and get off the street, because it just may prove that you kids could have made it together. And the scary thing that's going on in Santa Cruz, I went through this at the time of the Oda trial. We did some shows on it at length. But this is a repetition, and if you weren't conscious of it then, watch the cover stories and how they come down on this young generation, and then watch the real facts as they come in. And you'll get an education on how the special forces, the police department, the attorney general, the district attorney work to create a climate of fear and turn us against each other, when all the evidence of who's doing these murders someday will come into one big pile and add up to all the same people who achieved what they wanted by spreading this fear in our communities. That's it for today. We'll see you again next week. I hope the news will be easy on me next week. I can't take many more weeks like this. It's really, there's too many deaths and too many massacres and killings right now.
Okay, thank you, May. And this is KLRB in Carmel.
The Harmon Kardon 50 plus.